Wake up! Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. You are now listening to You and Me at 30. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I realize that you could be anywhere in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I sincerely appreciate that. You and Me at 30 is a new talk show airing on Sunday mornings. I'll be bringing you lively, thought-provoking discussion on a variety of topics. Each show will feature an extended conversation with a guest. While many of these individuals will come from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore and the local community, I will also feature several guests from around the country. Please note that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. This Tuesday is the unofficial start of March Madness, a three-week celebration of the best college teams across the country. If you're in an office, you may have coworkers joining office pools and sneaking off on long lunch breaks this week to check their tournament brackets. During the 1980s, Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. was the face of college basketball. Led by their intimidating center, Patrick Ewing, the Georgetown Hoyas went to three national championship games between 1982 in 1985. They cut down the nets in 1984, a historic moment because their coach, John Thompson Jr., became the first African-American head coach to accomplish such a feat. During the 1990s, the Hoyas produced future NBA Hall of Famers Allen Iverson, Alonzo Mourning, and Dikembe Mutombo. And today, the Hoyas continue to be a dominant force in college basketball, led by their new head coach, Patrick Ewing. My guest today is Gene Smith, a Hoya legend, a Washington, D.C. native, and the team captain of the 1984 National Championship team. Mr. Smith graduated from Georgetown University in 1984 and then went on to have a successful career for many years working with Nike's Jordan brand. He's also worked with Adidas and he's had his own business as well. Gene, thanks so much for joining me today.
Joshua Wright, thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, especially one of my most favorite subjects, which is the Georgetown Hoyas.
Right. And, you know, Gene, you and I, we've met, I guess, a couple of years back, and we've definitely had a lot of conversations about this topic. So I'm really excited to have you on here today, you know, right before March Madness kicks off. So tell me in a word, how would you describe Georgetown basketball during the 1980s?
One word. And I kind of want to make it relevant to 2019, would be Wakanda.
Hmm.
I felt as if we represented all black everything, from the head coach, you know, to the last man on the squad. I think, you know, the 80s were an interesting time in terms of a decade. Those were the Reagan years. So the fact that Georgetown is in D.C., we have an all-black team at a predominantly white university. Reagan's in office, and we're winning games. Where I don't know if I would go so far as to say that we knew we were the face of college basketball for black America, but I certainly have come to understand what that time meant for black America in terms of Georgetown being the team.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting that you say that. So, you know, I'm a native for the Washington, D.C. area. And, you know, I told you this in the past. When I was a kid growing up, I thought Georgetown was an HBCU. And for those who don't know what that means, that's historically black college and university, HBCU. Right. And I thought Georgetown was a predominantly black school just because of the way you guys appeared when I saw you all play on television or the few times my parents were able to take me to some of your games. And I'm sure there are other people, not just in D.C., but other people around the country who had those same feelings about Georgetown. So, you know, in the eyes of a lot of folks, you were Black America's team, which is somewhat surprising because Georgetown University is an elite, predominantly white, predominantly Catholic, Jesuit university, you know, just miles away from the White House. So how did the school, or not so much the school, but how did the team, I should say, gain that reputation of Black America's team?
I think, you know, Coach Thompson, as he's affectionately known, Big John, you know, he took a, took a position at an institution of higher learning. He's a D.C. native. He brought a style of play that was very symbolic of D.C. Tough, gritty defense. We created our offense off of our defense. And, you know, Thompson got there in 1972-73. So, again, a very tumultuous time in D.C. You know, you had the riots in 68. I just think, you know, that it was basically all, it was a domino effect. And, you know, Thompson was the right man at the time. I think the university was courageous in bringing him in. And I just think he established that, you know, the program was going to be dominant. You know, people remember the 80s, but actually Georgetown started winning in like 1975, 76. They won the ECAC, which was before the Big East. So they were winning, you know, they were winning championships from a regional standpoint. So they were, 1980 put them on the map when they lost to Maryland. And I think the Hoyas played Maryland twice that year. And beating them twice in that year secured the dominance in the DMV. So, again, Georgetown, Chocolate City, you know, I just think it was, you know, we were repping D.C. hard. And then from a country standpoint, I just think we were repping the country hard. And Big John was, eloquent, well-spoken, took positions that maybe some other coaches might not have taken. I just think he was front and center. He ran a really tight-knit program, and a lot of it was due to being successful. And at that time, you know, we're still, you know, we actually had a Black Coaches Association back then. We currently don't have one. Big John was representing Black America well.
You know, you mentioned that D.C. was Chocolate City. For people who are millennials, for younger folks who haven't been in the area all that long, yeah. If they live in D.C. now, if they've been in D.C. for, like, let's just say the past 10 years, or they're new to this area, Washington, D.C., you know, is far from being a chocolate city. So describe for me, like, what D.C. was like in the 70s and the 80s.
70s, 80s, you know, D.C. was a, you know, middle-class city, but, you know, it was proud. It was a Black city. A lot of people migrated to D.C. from the south, further south, because D.C. is below the Mason-Dixon. But I just think, you know, it was a tumultuous time. D.C. was on fire in 68. And I just think, you know, we had a very creative mayor for a while who kind of, was front and center.
Marion Barry.
And, you know, you got to take the good with the bad sometimes, particularly with our politicians. But he established a teenage program for kids, summer school program when I was growing up that was hugely impactful. So D.C. was experiencing some growth, and it was driven by, you know, Black professionals, Black politicians. So it was a time of promise, hope. You still had, you know, the war and stuff hanging around, images of that, the draft and stuff. Like I said, Reagan, 1981 to 89, which is interesting because that coincides with Georgetown's dominance. The picture of Big John, Patrick, and Reagan on Sports Illustrated will live on in infamy. So yeah, I just think the 70s and 80s was a time of rebirth, a time of adopting D.C. You were proud of D.C., you know, because the 60s were so rough. Yeah. So from a Black person's perspective, you know, D.C. was, you know, was a bit of a rallying cry.
Right, and I really want our listeners to realize that, you know, you had this positive image of, you know, let's just be frank, of Black masculinity that was being portrayed by Big John's program at Georgetown. And keep in mind that this is happening, you know, as the crack cocaine epidemic will, you know, start to take rise in Washington, D.C. And, you know, you'll have the street violence and things of that nature. And Thompson's players, to his credit and to their credit, they never got caught up, you know, that I know of, in any of that stuff that was happening. And, you know, there's a famous story about a meeting that Coach Thompson had with Rafael Edmonds, who was at the time the most notorious drug dealer, not just in D.C., but, you know, arguably in the country. But again, like I say, he kept his players clean, and you know, you never heard about any type of scandals or anything like that during his time at Georgetown. Gene, can you tell us how you ended up attending Georgetown University?
Two words, one name, Billy Martin. So Thompson was recruiting Billy Martin, and I literally, I was a year ahead of Billy. And for those who don't know, Billy Martin was one of the most famous power forwards at Georgetown. So Thompson was recruiting him and saw me, and I was up for the challenge, and the challenge was essentially, Gene, I'm bringing you here to be a practice player, and that sounded good to me. So yeah, my recruiting process was literally a couple weeks.
What high school did you play at?
Played at McKinley Tech in Northeast D.C.
Did you have many scholarship offers besides Georgetown?
I had one other scholarship offer to Morgan State in Baltimore, Maryland. So that would have been that was my go-to. Again, Georgetown was a truly remarkable change of life thing, and one of the biggest challenges I had growing up, because I certainly, you know, my high school career was, you know, was decent. I was honorable mention something, I'm sure. But certainly the Georgetown scholarship I was extremely proud. My family was extremely proud.
As a young black man coming from Washington, D.C. at that time, was it an adjustment for you going to Georgetown in terms of, you know, fitting in with the student body, classroom expectations?
It definitely was a learning curve. Mm-hmm. But one of the more unique things about Georgetown that I found was this learning that was based in everyone being involved. So my freshman year was my toughest year, just in terms of learning how to study. But I'm sure a lot of people had that freshman wall mentality, or freshman wall situation. But it was definitely an adjustment. But Thompson had built a program that was making sure that the education was front and center. So whatever adjustments I had to make, I made them. But it was mostly my freshman year.
And fitting in with the student body was pretty smooth.
Seamless. Okay. You know, obviously there were optics that were different.
Right.
But from a standpoint, I think that's what makes Georgetown special. All the things we talked about. I mean, you had this, you know, this black coach. You had this all black team, and then you had this prestigious university, and it worked. It worked because I think Georgetown does a good job as an institution of addressing issues when they have to. The fact that they brought Thompson in 72, by the time I got there, the university was open arms. But yeah, it's a special place, very special place.
And, you know, to help out with that transition from high school to college in the classroom, there was a person who was very pivotal for all of Georgetown's players named Mary Finley. Can you talk about who she was very briefly?
She was part of the staff. Thompson brought her with him from St. Anthony. She was an administrator at St. Anthony. She was a former nun. So she was an important part of the program in terms of helping you facilitate your academic schedule for the year. Having those weekly conversations about what's going on in school. Are you having any problems in certain classes? Are you letting your professors know if you need additional help? So just in terms of navigating, she was irreplaceable and tough as nails. So a very important part of the staff. And I don't think you'll find a Georgetown player that will have anything discerning to say about her. And if they do, it's because, you know, probably told you some things that you didn't want to hear at the time, but I'm sure as a grown person, you appreciate them now.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to UMES 30. Today's guest is Gene Smith, the team captain of the Georgetown Hoyas men's national championship basketball team in 1984. So, Gene, you guys cut down the nets in 1984. You defeat a team, the Houston Cougars, led by future NBA Hall of Famer Hakeem Olajuwon. I mean, 2 years before that, you guys lost in the national championship game to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Michael Jordan, who was a freshman at the time, hits a game-winning shot. You guys lose to UNC. You come back. You beat Houston. You get your national championship in 84. That was your senior year. And then you graduate. And then the following year, the Hoyas get upset by Villanova University. And a lot of people still to this day consider that to be maybe the biggest upset in sports history, next to Buster Douglas knocking out Mike Tyson in 1990. So, you know, with all of that said, do you believe that you guys had a dynasty?
I think it is pretty difficult to say that it wasn't.
Okay.
Again, I mentioned 75, 76, the Hoyas have started winning championships, the ECAC championships. But if you look at the first Big East championship in 1980, the Hoyas won that. They won the Big East championship 82, 84, 85, 87, and 89. The Hoyas won the Big East regular season title in 80, 84, 87, and 89. If the Hoyas win back-to-back 84, 85, or if the Hoyas win 82, 84, 85, I don't think there's any conversation about whether or not it's a dynasty. A dynasty is difficult. Difficult for me to, wrap my head around, but I do think the numbers speak for themselves.
And you guys had some memorable players on those teams. There was yourself, there was Patrick Ewing, you had Michael Graham, you had Reggie Williams. It's so many guys who played on all of those different teams. How come you didn't win more championships?
Wow. Michael Jordan in 82? In 85, again, we don't make excuses, man. And if anything, maybe it just speaks to how special that time was, and we accomplished what we accomplished. The program, I think it goes without saying, in the 80s, we're pretty dominant. We set the stage for why the program is being chastised now, because the bar is high. And I'm so glad that, Patrick has found his way back. While we won more championships, we should have. We should have. Huh. It's that simple.
So when we turn on ESPN, we see these 30 for 30 documentaries made about teams such as Michigan's Fab Five, UNLV, the Duke teams led by Coach Krzyzewski. We don't see a 30 for 30 dedicated to Georgetown. I mean, there was a film about the Big East a few years back that Ezra Edelman directed. But outside of that,
Very well done.
That was an excellent documentary. But there's never been a film dedicated solely to the Hoyas or to Big John. Why is that?
We don't want to float around any conspiracy theories.
Right.
You can find enough to talk about at Georgetown to fill a 30 for 30. Why is it not a 30 for 30? Probably Big John is not willing to sit down and give up the goods. But I do think it's long overdue and probably past due. Because strangely enough, this is the 35th anniversary of the 1984 championship.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you and I have seen anything in terms of a celebration for that. So March Madness is just starting. So I'll make sure I'll post some things for sure. I'll take care of it on my end.
Wow, that's something else. So you mentioned the fact that one reason we may have not have, had this film yet is because Big John now wanted to sit down and, like you say, give up the goods. And on that note, so Coach Thompson, we've talked a lot about all of the amazing things that he's done and how he's been a trailblazer. But he, if we're being honest, he was a very polarizing figure during his day. There was a lot of criticism within mainstream media folks who called him out for not allowing his players to speak in interviews. There was something called Hoya paranoia. You had people who were characterizing the play of his players as a thuggish game that was from the streets. And then, in recent years, there have been stories that have come out from, reporters, local reporters, some of his former friends, and even some former players who had pretty negative things to say about Coach Thompson in terms of, just his overall character and, like him being abusive with some of the players in terms of language, or him being, maybe too concerned at times with his position at Nike and you know, the money that he was making. So can you kind of just, I don't want to say set the record straight, but, you know, from your opinion, you know, somebody who played at Georgetown, who's, you know, been such a loyal alumnus over the years, how do you view Big John and how should we remember him?
I think you definitely should remember him for his accomplishments on the court. And then I think you need to look at him as we do any public figure. You know, you can't believe everything you hear, and you can't believe that everything's good. You know what I mean? So, and again, what made him so, why I have so much respect for the man, just on a really personal level, he did not have to recruit me. I was, and again, the recruiting pitch was you're going to be a practice player. So I say all this to say that he probably was as demanding a coach that I've ever been around, but that worked for me. I think in terms of Hoya paranoia, believe it. It was real. And it was real because, again, during those times, there weren't any dominant black programs or dominant black coaches, let alone a dominant black coach at a prestigious white university. And again, we're dealing with mainstream. So that might have been, that took some cajoling, or that took some getting used to. And Big John certainly did not make it easy in terms of being as demanding and asking for the same amount of respect for what we were trying to accomplish. You know, respect is given, respect is earned. I just think he ran the program in a way that was, you know, a lot of people weren't accustomed to. Particularly coming from a 6'10 black guy who speaks the King's English and actually, you know, stood up for causes that impacted, you know, student athletes. He was a staunch supporter and advocate. He was on the front lines. But not to say that he was not without shortcomings. But again, you know, coming from a single parent home, you know, my mom's was everything. The shortcomings is what made the relationship special, is what made the person special. Because, you know, we can look at all the negative, but at the end of the day, 90% of his players graduated. He was successful on the court. His players, the bulk of them left, matriculated, you know, became functioning citizens, contributing to the greater good. So, yeah, I mean, very interesting figure. All the reason more, Mr. Wright, this should be a 30 for 30. All the reason more.
Definitely. And what are you up to these days, Gene?
Wow. Still consulting. Okay. I'm a 30-year veteran of the footwear and apparel industry. I humbly just received an award from the a sneaker forum. They just had their first conference in D.C. At the Smithsonian. And I received a foundational award for the industry. And I have to say, I spent most of my career in sales, and the part of the salesman, obscure, like you're not part of the bigger presentation. You do your job almost in anonymity. And the fact that I was recognized as a, you know, for sales and consulting the industry was pretty rewarding. I'm also, a side note, you have an invitation. I'm building a home in Havana. So that's keeping me pretty busy. And I'm attending as many Hoya games as possible. Let's go Hoyas. I just want one win. We can get Marquette on the road. Just need one win in the Big East. And I think we could possibly get into the tournament. Not that that's the end-all, be-all. But it is. I think it would be an accomplishment for Patrick in the second season.
Yeah, right. And on that note, you know, with March Madness starting up, a lot of people are picking teams such as Duke with Zion Williamson or UNC Chapel Hill or Kentucky to cut down the nets this year. But moving forward, do you foresee Patrick Ewing's Georgetown Hoyas winning a championship or at least going back to a Final Four anytime soon?
Georgetown will be in a Final Four, Elite Eight, Sweet 16 scenario sooner than later. It will be eerily similar to Patrick ascending you know, Patrick arriving at Georgetown, Patrick's ascension. Because there's no way a kid's not going to want to play for Patrick. Yes, he's archaic to the millennials. Yes, they don't know. But by the same token, guilty by association. You know, you have, I think you have enough history there that sooner or later there's going to be a top five kid. And all you need is one. And hopefully what I'm encouraging or what I'm hopeful about is that they'll build from the DMV again. So I think that's what makes the place special. And I'm pretty tired of Jay Wright coming down poaching all of our players in the DMV. So I do think I give him a couple years, give him a couple more years, I think he'll be successful at Georgetown. This has been a tough year. I mean, I think there have been games where just their inexperience is the only thing that you could attribute the L's to. But yes, I think Patrick will cut down some nets while he's coaching at Georgetown.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, you heard it here first. That's the prediction. Georgetown will rise again. We want to thank Eugene so much for joining us. I also want to send a special shout out to another Hoya legend, Mark Tillman, a good friend of Gene's who wasn't able to join us today. But again, Gene, thank you so much for being with us today.
Appreciate it, Joshua.
Okay. I'll be in touch. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
We end each show with a segment called Parting Shots. Here I give my thoughts on something happening in the news, pop culture, or life in general that has piqued my interest. On March 7th, LeBron James passed his idol Michael Jordan on the NBA's all-time scoring list. Not bad for a guy who never played college basketball or had his one shining moment during March Madness. As good as he's been on the court, I'm far more impressed with LeBron off the court. He started a public elementary school with a STEM-based curriculum for at-risk kids in his native city, Akron, Ohio. Graduates of the school will receive a full college scholarship provided by the LeBron James Family Foundation. Not only is LeBron an entertainment mogul with multiple television and film projects, he's also the executive producer for the new 2 Chainz album, Rap or Go to the League. Most importantly, LeBron has taken the torch from athletes of the past like Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to use his global platform to speak out on a number of political matters, including racial and social injustice. Last year, Fox News host Laura Ingraham famously said that LeBron should just shut up and dribble after some comments that he made in regards to the president. Love him or hate him, LeBron James continues to prove to Ms. Ingraham and to all of his critics that he is more than an athlete. And that's our show for the week. Thanks again to our guest, Gene Smith. We do this every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it. Like us on Facebook and social media. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.